Starting now.
How you feeling?
I'm feeling good. Sick. I'm a little sick, bro.
Are you really?
I think I am. I got the sniffles a little bit.
I've got this weird cough thing, but I've always had that.
I was a smoker for
10 years. It's a... I have to do that periodically, but I've had to do that for 15 years because of unfortunate decisions in my early days.
We have to charge people for that ASMR that you just gave everybody.
Yeah. If you really like people clearing their throats out there, you've tuned into the right episode of the Film Room, because we're going to be discussing a movie that is all about...
phlegm.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's flubber.
Mucus.
No, just kidding. We're talking Contagion, guys.
Yes, 2011's gem of the year, in my opinion.
The scariest movie in the last decade, probably. I was telling my wife this the other day, because... she will not watch scary movies with, like, demons or, like, you know, hell stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, she just doesn't go there. But she loves serial killer stuff and, like...
the true life horror.
That's what scares me, bro. Yeah. And I was telling her, like, this is probably the scariest movie. Even the freaking, like, Day One is, like, in dark red.
Yes.
Like, 80s Stephen King, like, writing, like, oh, gosh, something bad's gonna happen.
It doesn't take very long for this movie to get super intense as well. And... the first thing I wrote down, and I've seen this movie so many times in the last 10 years, probably more than any other movie. I would say I'm in the 8 to 12 viewings of this at this point.
8 to 12. 12 in 10 years?
Yeah.
Wow.
I would say once every...
That's not bad.
That's not bad.
You're just keeping a very healthy level of check yourself, don't handshake a lot of people, because you're not on Howie Mandel, like... yeah. At this point, you're not there.
It also plays into my fascination with this film, maybe unlocking some of my family history and what they're into. My mom's a microbiologist at UT Southwestern who's studying cancer research and manipulations of genomes and stuff like that to improve the cancer research out there. My dad, biological father, from what I hear, was in the same lane before he passed. So
you're patient zero.
Not. No.
You're patient zero. When everybody starts dying from, like, disease, look at Sasha.
No,
man.
Not at all. What I'm saying is I may have this innate inclination to be interested in this sort of stuff, and I don't even know it. Like, it may be in my blood to, well, okay, wait a second.
Change your genetic marker? Yeah. Yeah. It's probably
it
in your blood
in
at
blood.
Some point, bro.
But it's patient probably zero. Why I'm obsessed with Contagion is because my parents are both from that field and study it with all their diligence in life. And the best I can do, barring going back to school and starting all over again, is watch Contagion 12 times.
Oh, my God. I think my obsession a little bit came with this. I've seen it only a couple of times. It's been a while since I saw it. And I saw it on DVD or back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
When it came
those
out, like, a year later.
Days.
Yeah. You know, I watched it and I was not prepared what was about to happen. I think I watched it for the same reason that many Americans watched it after the theater run, was that Gwyneth Paltrow dies in the very beginning.
Oh.
In a very violent way. And I think everybody wanted to see her die for some reason.
That's why you think people went to see the
dude,
movie?
I'm telling you, people hate Gwyneth Paltrow. Like, dang. Even back then, when was... okay, so this movie was 2011.
Yeah. I thought it was hot off the... it was perfect timing for this movie because of the H1N1 sort of scare, and SARS was also...
if anything, it's perfect timing right now.
Well, we'll get
to
that
yeah,
later. Yeah,
but I would say that, you know, when I watched it, I wasn't prepared on being scared so rightfully so. You know, as a young man, I was like, holy crap. Because I was already out of college by then, 2011. And I think I had a better scope of the world than a teenager would.
Okay.
And it seemed very real. And come to find out, it is actually a very real movie on the CDC saying that...
so many fronts.
A lot of stuff is... that's how it would go down. But of course, a lot of stuff that they said that wasn't real or how it would go down.
Yeah,
so there's always inconsistencies.
The 40% mortality rate is a little theatrical for my liking.
No, I don't think that's the theatrical point. I really don't. I think the numbers are pretty good. I think that they're saying is like, oh, we wouldn't, you know, wash ourselves before we, you know, go into a place. We would wash ourselves when we come out.
I gotcha.
Little inconsistencies like that, you know, that they see that are against their protocol or policies.
Gotcha.
So we're talking about Contagion, guys.
Yeah.
My name is Philip. This is Sasha.
Sasha, and this is the Film Room, so we got to start there.
I know, and I do want to say that a little bit of my obsession came from... I'm a little bit of a prepper, guys. I'm sorry. I'm going to give this out. And if you don't know what a prepper is.
A doomsday prepper?
I wouldn't say doomsday. I just like to be prepared. Okay. I guess I get that from the Boy Scouts for the 3 weeks I was in them for a while. But I always will. I have a bug out bag.
You know I got from the 3 weeks? I was a Cub Scout. I just got a bunch of
cookies. I'm a Cub Scout. I was a Cub Scout.
Oh, you were a Cub Scout too?
Yeah,
props.
I was a Cub Scout.
Nancy, we're learning more about each other by the minute here. I went on a couple of Cub Scout retreats, and that was it. I got a handful of badges. Built my Pinewood Derby car, but I did not turn into a prepper because of Boy Scouts.
Well, I had this coin that I bought from the Boy Scout or Cub Scout store, the Weeblow store, whatever it was called, and the coin always said, be prepared. It was the motto for the Boy Scouts or the Cub Scouts. So, but also, I grew up in a military family, so my dad's always prepared for things, and that just kind of like filtered down. So there's just too many things that could happen in this world, and one of them is a viral outbreak, an epidemic, and I think it's such a high percentage that it's going to happen.
I think they happen more than we know.
Yeah. But we're talking about global epidemic, right?
And I think those
we're due for one soon, if not already happening.
One. We've already got the flu. The flu is
when
a global
I meant like
epidemic.
Something that we something along
that
the lines
hits
of this
us
movie.
Hard, fast, yes. and quick.
In fact, one of the things that I've noticed is that Bill Gates for the past like I think 10 years he's been building underground bunkers for people and himself. Like he is one of the advocates for like, hey, this is going to happen.
Yeah.
This is like Bill Gates is like really concerned.
And, he is.
And a lot of rich people seem to be concerned. So when they start doing stuff, I'm like, oh, dude, I need a bunker too.
Well, yeah. And that raises your eyebrows too when we talk about current events. We'll get there. But Bill Gates donated $100 million less than a week ago for the coronavirus vaccine fund. So that is pretty weird.
Yeah, the coronavirus, we're just going to mention it lightly here.
Yeah.
This is another reason why we're kind of bringing this up, because there seems to be rebreathed life into this movie because
top 10 on iTunes, top 10 on all streaming platforms that it's available on in the last month, along with some other films that tap into this sort of this hubris of love for viral outbreaks.
Yeah. So everybody's interested because there's a lot of parallels to this movie and what's actually going on.
There are scarily a lot of them.
Yes. And before we get into the crazy medical talk a little bit, let's go into a little bit about the movie,
the
since
baseline.
That's why you're here,
the
right?
The
film.
Specs.
So this movie was made in 2011. It came out September 9th, by the way. This is an hour and 46 minute film, so it's not too long.
Oh, it moves so quickly.
Yes.
First thing I wrote down was that this thing moves like a virus. The movie itself, it hits you, it intoxicates you, and then you're glued to the screen for the next hour and a half. And my wife and I, our most recent viewing was at 1 a.m. She said, I'm going to bed. And I said, okay, I'm going to throw Contagion on. And then she rolled her eyes, and she kept her headset on, and she watched the whole thing.
Yeah. Steven Soderbergh.
Yeah, it's tough to turn him off.
Yeah, he's got a great editing style that just flows so quickly, and everything that's coming next is important.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little bit more. It's a PG-13 film. You can take your kids. Maybe you'll get them a little scared.
Couple
I don't know.
Couple of curse words here and there.
Yeah. And a
couple of vomiting ups of blood.
Mm-hmm. Made by Warner Brothers, by the way. This movie's made by Warner Brothers. And if you don't know anything about Steven Soderbergh, I think a lot of filmmakers really like this guy. And let me go over his... I'm not going to go over all of his movies, but a good chunk, because he's got quite a bit. His career started with Sex, Lies, and Videotape, which was
and
in
a
89.
Videotape.
And Videotape. Yeah. That was in 89, Kafka in 91, King of the Hill in 93, The Underneath 95, Grey's Anatomy in 96, Out of Sight in 93. That's kind of when I started.
That was his big breakout.
Yeah, as
George
far as
Clooney,
commercial,
yeah.
commercialism, because he won the Palme d'Or and Sundance and all these things. The Limey in 99, Traffic in 2000. That was
great
the
movie.
Big hit, Traffic, for me. That's when that changed my world in filmmaking. Like I'll show you some old short films that I've done that are kind of based off of Traffic. But Aaron Brockovich in 2000 as well.
Again.
Ocean's 11 in 01. Solaris in 02. Full Frontal in 02. Ocean's 12 in 04. Eros in 04. Bubble in 05. The Good German in 06. Che 1 and 2 in 08. Magic Mike in 012.
Important movie.
Yeah, Side Effects in 13 and Logan Lucky in 17.
Okay.
Again, I didn't go over all of them, like Ocean's 13 and all this stuff, so... There's a bunch of other movies that he's done.
Yes. I thought he also did the recent Unsane.
Yes.
Okay. So Which is a really underrated film that I recommend everyone check out there. It's in the same vein as this movie. It deals more a little bit with mental health than it does physical health, but it's a scary movie too. So I want to tap into just a handful of those movies because there are a lot of true life sort of, this doesn't get highlighted enough topics in his movies, and I want to expose the truth of them. Aaron Brockovich specifically, Traffic. As well.
Mm-hmm.
The drug trade and the look at it from every political...
Well, Kafka.
You get these multi-view movies from different perspectives that are much larger discussions, and he does a good job in 2 hours of showing you all of the variability within this large, important topic. And I think that's crucial to do.
Yeah.
It's kind of what we try to do here, is we try to go from the ground up and say, from casual to super
fan
aficionado,
yeah,
this is the range of perspective that you can have for this movie. And he does it with director.
With gusto.
Yeah.
And you know what? That's why our next episode is going to be on Magic Mike. Because it's a terribly underrated problem.
He's kidding, folks.
No, I'm kidding. I've actually never seen it, so I can't really say it's
bad. Although our female viewership may have just gone up like 40%.
Oh, man.
They're all tuning in for the Magic
Mike episode. One day I'm going to watch that movie to see what the craze is about, but
as long as you follow it up with, do a double matinee.
Magic Mike 2?
No, Magic Mike 1 and then Hustlers. Like, keep it balanced,
bro. Okay. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like Magic Mike might be a little bit more glint in your eye, like wholesome.
It might be.
I don't know. We'll see. But so Steven Soderbergh, he's a prolific director, man. In fact, from my research on this movie, it seems like most of the people that are with him on this movie have been with him since the beginning.
Yeah.
So he keeps the same crew around, the people that he trusts.
Yeah.
Especially the composer. I did want to go. I know you want to talk about music.
Man, do I love this score.
Yeah. So the composer is somebody relatively that I think a lot of people have not really delved into. He's not a well-known name as far as, like, you know, Jerry Goldsmith and all these.
Yeah.
Or John Williams.
Rest in peace, John Williams. Yeah. He passed away just the other day. Yeah. So, yeah,
James Horner. All these guys that are prolific composers. But Cliff Martinez is the composer there. He also did Sex, Lies, and Videotape. In 89, Pump Up the Volume in 90, which I
love that movie.
It's
what we're doing here, bro.
Yeah, I know, exactly. He did Kafka in 91, King of the Hill in 93, The Underneath 95, Grey's Anatomy. As you can see, it's the same ones, even The Limey, Traffic, Solaris. He did Narc in 02, Wicker Park in 04, Havoc in 05, Drive in 11, Spring Breakers in 12.
Oh, man, he did Drive?
Yeah,
okay.
Only God Forgives 13. He does a lot of Nicholas Refn. I forget
Refn.
His name.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
And here's something that's unusual. He did Cry 4. He did the
video game.
Yeah, he did the music for
I
that.
I played all those. I don't remember the music
for the
four specifically standing out, but Blood Dragon's music was great. It was very techno-y and very ampy. And this score line in Contagion...
There's definitely a synth to it.
It has a synthy, frantic feel to it.
Yeah.
It's like a building synth that wants to get sort of with your pulse. It sort of wants to match your pulse and in a quickened way. It wants to quicken your pulse as you're listening to it. That's what I got from it. And again, I've studied the ins and outs of this movie's composition for some time now because I'm obsessed with it. But that there are scene cuts where this is a movie that we touched on it before. Soderbergh does it great. He shows you all the different perspectives from multiple characters.
Yeah.
And the frantic score is only present with some of the characters, with the CDC researchers and the people that are racing against the clock to sort of keep this thing contained and figure it out. That's when the score picks up. It's not with Matt Damon. It's not with the everyday folks that the score picks up. It's with the researchers. I found that super interesting because it wants you to get a different sense of tone for the unpredictability factor, I guess, the fear. It does want to scare you into saying, look, even the professionals that do this for a living, they can't figure this thing out.
And that's a hard thing to do. I think it's very overlooked as far if you're a filmmaker, I think you understand how hard that is to do, to change the tempo. It's like having, because you got to look at a movie like one song, right?
Yeah.
Some people might want to say it as an album. You can, but I think of it as one song. The director's vision is supposed to be one tone. You have to look at the painting, right? Instead of just one facet of the painting. And the composing is a big chunk of that.
For sure.
In fact, audio is more than 50%, if not like 80% of a movie.
It's dialogue. Yeah. It's music. There's sound effects. Mm-hmm.
It's more powerful. So people will forgive a bad image faster than they will forgive bad audio. It's just the way it is now. So when I look at that, what he's done, and it's probably why he's kept the same composer for a long time. They know the same language, the in and outs. He can probably anticipate what Steven Soderbergh's going to want before he wants it. But I find it incredibly interesting that you say that, because to change the tempo, it's kind of like John Bonham, like as far as Led Zeppelin goes, right? He's one of the best drummers. He can change the time signature and keep the whole of the song intact. Yeah. And that's what Steven Soderbergh's doing here with the composer.
The 80s prog rock guys.
How did he keep it? Bands. Yeah. How did he keep it one tone, but change the music for each scene or each perspective without jarring you out of the story itself? Because when you watch, like, let's take Ocean's 11, for example, right? That is, like, for me, playing jazz. Like, right? He has a very, it's very, they have a there's goal, a there's an objective, the storytelling, sometimes it's non-linear, sometimes it's linear, but the music is jazz, and he's linking all of it up. It's all one type of music, right? Pretty much. This one, it does have a, like a synthy, but traditional feel of a, it's like almost like a synth was making traditional music, and he just played all that different tempo throughout, and I didn't realize that when you said that, but I do believe you.
It is there, especially when they jump. When the CDC and the WHO, the World Health Organization employees, so let's highlight some of the cast here because it'll be important for context. You've got at the helm, Matt Damon and Gwyneth Paltrow are the first two characters, but they're the everyday folks. They're the common people.
Totally the non-common people of the whole group.
You're right.
That's so funny. Do you think that Soderbergh did that on purpose? He's like, let's get the two most famous good-looking people right now in 2011 and make them regular people and have one of them die.
Well, Well, spoiler alerts, Philip. Within 5 minutes of this movie,
Gwyneth Paltrow bites comes to dust. A convulsing. Like, dude, I think she's even made into a meme the way she dies in this. Like, I feel bad for her to a certain sense. I think, you know, like you said, her character brought it on to herself. I feel like it's hard to say that because infidelity, I couldn't.
We're not going to go scene by scene, but basically she opens, the movie opens up with Gwyneth Paltrow on the phone with her affair,
Steven Soderbergh, by the way, that's his voice.
Oh, that was him?
Yeah, cool. On the phone as the guy that she's messing around with. Yeah.
And she is in a casino in Macau. She's on an overseas trip, and she is visibly ill. She's sweating a little bit, and her face is very red.
A little
she's,
splotchy.
She is in the incubation period.
I wonder if, you know, I was the very beginning too. The way her face is a little splotchy, and I love it because Gwyneth is usually made up, like a lot of makeup on her, where she looks pristine.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I feel like they didn't put makeup on her, and maybe
they picked her.
Yeah, the redness was like
perfect.
Maybe they just rubbed her a little bit, where it kind of like make her skin a little
bit
red.
She's very pale, so yes, it was distinctive. It was a distinctive look, and right away you know, oh, this chick's sick. Yeah. How sick is she? We don't know quite yet. But then she flies overseas back home, and she hugs her son, and she hugs her husband, Matt Damon. Mm. And this is day one, and like you mentioned, the movie it chronicles the development of the virus via these days, and it shows you how quick these things start taking shape.
How many days in total again?
I want to say it's in the 20s.
Yeah, it's like less than a month.
20s to... it's multiple months. The longer story is... it jumps way further out in the timeline in the end. But the 80% chunk of the movie where things are going is 1 month. Gwyneth Paltrow...
That's so hard. It's... You know what, man? That's such a... I love the way Steven Soderbergh films it because he films it like if you were watching it as a regular person.
Yes.
Because you see the daughter see from the doorway like the mom convulsing on the floor.
Yeah.
And she doesn't even see her mom's face. But that's exactly probably the burned image in your head as a child seeing... I bet you a lot of folks that hit home hard when they saw that because I've never been in that position, but it felt super real.
It did feel real.
Yeah.
And it felt like very confusing, mm-hmm. too, from the child's standpoint, from the husband's standpoint. There's that memorable scene in the first 15 minutes where she dies, and Matt Damon's talking to the doctors, and he just doesn't believe it. He rejects everything the doctors are saying, like, much to, we tried to bring her back. We tried to give her all of the treatment that we could, but she just died. And he's like, okay, so can I go talk to her now?
Well, see, that's, I think, because there's a point, I love that part too, because I really saw that part, I was like, oh, I want to bring that up, because the doctor doesn't say that, you know, he says, we tried everything, you know, your wife did die, you know, but he doesn't say for like how long, like, did you bring her back? Like, I think he's in his mind, he's thinking, oh, she died for a bit and she came back, you know, but I think it is the power of denial there that, you know, you just take her in, this is what's going on, everything's going to be okay, and I can't imagine what Matt Damon's character is going through. Like, I was talking to my wife about it. We were watching it this morning, and she's like, God, I'm eating. I don't want to be watching this. So sad. But I was like, gosh, man, I don't know what I would do in that position as a husband, as a father. Like, holy crap, what is going on here? And then he's quarantined, you know, and then he's trying to, his son dies. Like,
his son dies
God.
The same day, which I found, this is where the Hollywood element comes in. And there, I have a couple of criticisms with this movie.
He's a child, so his immune system is not like as an adult. It'll probably go through quicker.
Right, but that's my criticism elderly. Of Contagion is that it has to be theatrical a little bit in the extreme swiftness of how quickly this movie works. Viral transmissibility with stuff like this, unless you're talking about like a plague that's wiping out everyone 100% of the time, it typically does not move that quickly.
You mean the incubation period?
Yeah, the incubation period was like 1 to 6 hours for this thing, which was very...
Was it? I thought it was a 24-hour thing, because Kate Winslet's character, it takes a little while for her to die when she contracts it, when the symptoms happen.
Well, I'm basing
happen.
It off Gwyneth Paltrow's son getting sick and dying the same day that she died.
Again, I attribute that to his immune system is nowhere near what ours is because he's so
developed.
Young.
That's
yeah,
fair.
I would find
but
like
I
if they
know.
Had a grandpa
Matt Damon
in the
calls
house.
Him the Mighty Clark.
Yeah,
like he's beaten a couple of childhoods.
Well, that's where his story ends,
dude. Clark's death in this movie is kind of appalling. Yes. It's like a scene out of a Goosebumps.
Well, it's a taboo thing in Hollywood to kill children.
Yes,
it really
for sure.
is. In fact, I bet you that this movie was not shown in a lot of countries where they ban any killing of children. You can't watch them in certain countries. Like I know in Korea, when I went to go watch Episode 1. There's a part where I forget his name, that one of the pod racers, he sabotages Anakin's pod.
Sebulba,
yeah. He takes off a piece. They didn't have that in the movie.
Oh,
they
see.
Edited that whole part out.
Just because of the kid.
I wouldn't have known if I didn't see it five times in the theater.
Well, props to Steven Soderbergh. He doesn't care. So he is bent on portraying as realistic.
He does care.
Well, he's bent on portraying as realistic of a portrayal
I know,
as is possible.
I think that what he did with this movie was... you need to applaud
it. I can't
it.
Wrap my head around it. It's
How did
showing
he get it
you
made?
All of the perspectives... That this thing, this
all the
is
key
the,
perspectives.
Yeah,
really.
This is the most honest look from a bystander's perspective that, or a bystander's understanding of how these things work. This is the most, I think, behind the scenes look we'll ever get.
Well, it educates a lot of people.
The
CDC
is not doing
it. It pulls no punches.
Yeah.
Even the woman Kate Winslet, she's investigating. She dies.
She's
she contracts it.
Epidemiologist.
Yeah.
Who's researching
in the field.
The local cases in Minnesota, which is where Matt Damon and his wife live.
Yeah. Well, she gets sent there by Lawrence Fishburne's
the CDC.
Character.
Yeah.
Yes. And he used to be in the field, and you can tell that it weighs on him when she contracts it. Like he's like
when she contracts it, Lawrence Fishburne is sitting in his office, and he's realizing this is a bigger thing than even I expected it to be.
And that's when he calls his wife, basically, and gives
Sanaa
her the inside.
Lathan, yeah, so many good actors in this movie. So just real quick, let's go through the whole
actors
cast,
and
then
yeah,
we'll get,
sorry.
So you got Matt Damon, Gwyneth Paltrow, Kate Winslet, Marion Cotillard.
Is it Cotillard or Cotillard?
It's Cotillard.
Okay, I always wondered. She's French, right?
Yeah, you have to... The double L's is pronounced with a Y.
Just like Spanish.
Cotillard. Jude Law, love him in this movie. Jennifer Ely, who is little known, but she actually...
She looks like Meryl Streep's daughter.
She's the most memorable female character in this movie for me, over Kate Winslet. She is the...
Kate Winslet was the one. That one hurt me, bro. Like, that was the story that got to me, actually, in the whole movie.
Was Kate Winslet? We'll get to it in a second. Yeah. We got Larry Fishburne as well. Good old Lair.
How dare you call him Larry? It's Lawrence, bro.
Nah, we go way back. Matrix.
Sir Lawrence Fishburne.
No, he's not more, English. He's Morpheus. We go way back.
Yeah.
Elliot Gould, who plays a wonderful senior sort of independent virologist who's studying the virus itself, and he helps the government early on in his own independent research lab because the government gives him money to say, hey, you're the best in your field.
He's level three, not level four. But you know what? If people don't know who that guy is, that was Monica and Ross's dad. Just letting you know.
Elliot Gould. And also some
from Friends,
notable actors with minor roles. Bryan Cranston's basically the guy who just sits.
He's a general.
He stands around and he's listening in. But he's got a role. I mean, he is the guy who's, I'm going to let the professionals talk to me about this. I'm the army guy. I'm used to physical conflict and navigating those things. I don't know what's going on here, so I'm just going to absorb everything. And you do need that perspective as well, because it's important.
Definitely military would be involved. Yes. They're the ones that are going to be quarantining everybody. It's different. It's martial law at that point. So the only thing I would have as far as critique on Bryan Cranston is that he's far too good of an actor to have been wasted on such a small
on a standby role
and bland part. Like, I'm sorry, they could have made the general a little bit better. I think he was kind of left aside when he could have been a much more interesting character, because the implications of the military being involved is much greater than I think that this movie portrays, honestly. And it'd be much more tragic and brutal. I wonder why they didn't show anybody getting shot by the military trying to leave the quarantine zone. Like, that should have been a real thing.
That's probably a very real thing. And this is part of the scary, eerie similarities with what's going on in the real world right now, February 7th or 8th, whatever day we're on. Overseas in China, this movie, at least the first 45 minutes of it, have played out exactly tit for tat. Pretty much of the course. Same thing. Minus the statistics of the specific outbreak itself, the CDC being involved, the WHO being involved, the suppression of certain information. Mm-hmm.
The different politics coming into play. Like you said, there's 50 different organizations, countries.
That scene in Contagion where they're all on the big TV wall and they're saying, you haven't figured any of this out. Basically.
But all those different protocols, all the red tape, all the time it takes to convince people that you have
serious.
A real problem. Yeah. So it's totally, and that's why I think, you know, when you see this movie and you see the mom get angry, it's because they don't understand that they can't just make vaccines or make, you know, something like that. Like, everybody just, we've gone so long in a golden age, I think, where we just realize that everything should be available
readily
to us.
Readily available to
yeah,
us.
Yeah, and it's like,
instant gratification doesn't work like this with that.
And I love that line where she's like, Matt Damon, he finds out that he's immune.
Yeah.
He's been quarantined. They figure out, and he's like, well, why don't you just make a vaccine out of my blood? She's like, it takes a long time to figure that out, you know? And that's the kind of thing that even I, as
meanwhile,
a person,
I'm sitting back like saying, but it shouldn't, like, it should be quicker.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, I think it was very educational to the people. If you're listening, if you're understanding, keep an open mind that the things that you would be mad and a lot of those people are mad at, it's nothing to be mad at. This is a bad thing that happened, and we're all trying to figure this out, and you need to do what you need to do to keep yourself, because I honestly, I'm one of those people that don't believe that the government doesn't fix everything. It doesn't. Nobody knows anything. There's people that let on that they know more.
Boy, am I on board with you there. Absolutely.
Yeah. So there's a responsibility to yourself and to the people that you love that when something like this goes down,
be as informed as possible.
Informed, but you need to take precautions. Like, even like Matt Damon's character when he takes that little boy off.
The boyfriend of
his. The boyfriend?
Yeah.
See, that's what I mean, is that the normal people are those two kids. They don't know better. They're just like, we don't have it. We can't give it to each other. But they're not looking at it scientifically. Like, the incubation period, there's no symptoms for a certain amount of period. And that's what I mean, is like the mob gets out of control where they're trampling people, but they don't realize that it takes time to make this. It's not the government trying to make money. They're literally freaked out themselves.
Now, wait a second. Because here's where you got to give Steven Soderbergh a lot of credit. Mm-hmm. Because just like he's creating these characters that are supposed to feed us different perspectives of how this thing's being handled, he's also giving us information about how this thing does get handled traditionally. So you got like Jude Law's character is an interesting topic here. So he's the independent journalist, in my opinion, who had some foresight going in that this was a bigger problem than anybody knew.
Now remember, independent journalist is very like, that's not, he was a blogger, okay? And he was a guy
in
that
2020,
was,
he's that's like what Alex, independent journalism is, if it's done respectively.
But he has no credentials, basically, okay? He's Alex Jones.
He has connections.
Without as many connections.
Okay,
basically,
fair enough.
He's a conspiracy theorist guy that writes a blog.
Yes.
That has a little bit of connections, who was not there for his friends when they needed him.
And then something comes along in his pipeline that draws his attention. It's like a Subway video of a guy passing out and having a seizure, right?
Mm-hmm.
In China. And he brings that to a larger news organization, the San Francisco Chronicle, and he shows one of his friends there this video, and she laughs at him and says, we can't run with this. And then he rebuts with, you know, this is bigger than anyone knows, and if I see any indication that you're going to take my story, I'm going to be very upset, blah, 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 blah. And then he walks out and he says, print media is dying. Just want you all to know that, as he walks out of the San Francisco Chronicle. But he also is the guy who invests time into getting ahead of this thing as much as he can. In my opinion, he comes off as more ahead of it than anybody else in this movie. I know you may disagree with that because you think he was in it for the wrong reasons. That's an interesting 100%. Discussion itself.
So that's what we debated on, is that this character, you see him as the guy that got ahead of it and he's trying to spread the truth.
I see him as,
right?
If Jude Law was around right now in the coronavirus, I would follow him on Twitter and I would care more about what he was saying than CNN.
I view him as the opportunistic person. Like, I don't believe that he cured himself with the, what was it called again? I forget what it's called. He
Prosithia.
Prosithia or something like that. There's a rumor going around that this drug is curing people and that the government's suppressing it.
Solution to this outbreak.
And what I love about the character is because it does take a chunk or percentage of the population that believes that, like, maybe vaccines create autism or that it's bad for you, worse than the measles or anything that it's protecting you against. There's all these people out there that have been convinced that the medical practices are just, they're being suppressed by government most of the time. And it's true. A good amount of them are.
Well,
big
because
pharma
they're
does.
In bed with each other.
Yes. But at the same time, I personally believe he has become in league with them because, for one, supposedly he lies to his coworker friend.
He's a double agent.
No, I think he's one of those people that changed. He saw the opportunity, right? I mean, first off, he's a journalist. Those people are ambitious and opportunistic.
Independent journalists.
They need to find something to sell as well.
They need to latch on to something so that they rise in prominence.
So I don't think he was doing it out of the kindness of his heart. He's trying to warn the world. He's just trying to, he's trying to break into the world himself. And he found something that he's going to make himself famous. But
then he helps people too.
He does help people in that
informationally.
In his, but his motive is not to help people. His motive is,
I see.
Even when he's talking to the guy at the end that sets him up for the thing, he's like, this is my brand.
Yeah.
You know, he talks about that. He knows about his marketing and branding.
That's what it's turned into, because he's got posters on the walls.
Yes.
At the start of the movie, you're not seeing the Jude Law poster where it says profit versus profit.
Yes.
Like, he's got profit spelled out. P-H-E-T.
I think he started as this guy.
Yeah.
But the absolute power corrupts absolutely. So when you get into if somebody offers you $4.5 million, which was notified at the end of this movie. Now, you can believe it or not. Maybe you believe the government planted that and they're all going to do this because of what he did as far as the interview with Lawrence Fishburne's character. You can see that as a punishment, which I think you probably are on that side. But for me, I personally think that he did profit from it. Just kind of like I believe that probably the Russian...
It's Forsythia.
Forsythia, sorry.
Yeah, so we got to get that right, because it's a major player in this game.
Yeah, because...
It's this homeopathic
cure. It doesn't... But the thing is, it doesn't cure anybody else.
And it's real, bro.
Yeah,
Forsythia is a genus of the flowering plants in the olive family.
Yeah. So, but the thing is that people, you know, like he said, that he did this online. He said, I'm going to cure myself, and then he's not sick anymore,
right? Do you think he was actually sick ever?
No. Here's the reason why. if you vaccinated yourself, if there was a cure, why would you go around the city wearing that thing? He knows that he's not. He's sold out. And that's why he's not going to come up with anything at the end. He's like, are you wearing a wire? Like he's all paranoid because he took money from Forsythia to promote this so he could get paid. And and I know he felt it when his friend that he talked to at the San Francisco Chronicle, she came by his doorstep because she couldn't get medicine at the pharmacy when everybody almost tramples her when they're out of Forsythia and all these other stuff. She goes over there and begs him for anything. And he says, they broke into my house. I don't have anything, which they didn't. Okay, and there was nothing there, and he's in his little thing, and he feels bad.
It's all make-believe.
He knows, he's like, I'll get you some when I can, and he never does, because he knows
it
doesn't matter.
We don't know that.
No, he doesn't. She dies.
She does?
Yeah, there's a picture of her with like flowers and candles, and he visits it, and he's like sad about it on the steps. So it's like, you know that weighs on him because he misled her. He goes against what...
I think that is tapping into the flaws of Jude Law's character, being more motivated by he wants to rise in prominence and he wants to be a notable name. You can get a sense of that early.
But he took a left turn for it.
Yeah, and there's another criticism of this movie, perhaps. Other than Matt Damon, there's no pure... doing the best at all times for the sake of Kate Winslet
the other one.
And the other doctor,
and Matt
too.
Damon. And the
other female doctor,
Monica,
Jennifer Ely.
And Ross.
Yeah.
Oh, Jennifer Ely.
She's really good.
There's a lot of people that, you know what, and most of the good guys are on The Who, World. Honestly, those people, they're trying their best to figure things out that none of us would be able to figure out.
The boots on the ground are.
Yes.
The higher-ups are not.
I even think some of the higher-ups, because when you get into that arena, you are dealing with mass, like, hysteria. Like, you're dealing with the mob.
That's
like, you
true.
Can't control.
You do have to control it.
They're trying to control as best as they can. So I don't really get mad at that stuff, because I understand it's like the whole, you know, good for humanity thing. Like, you have to lose a few people. And it's a hard,
and
I would never want to be
more
there.
Than a few. It's like 2.5 million Americans are dead by day 26.
That's the one thing that I would hate. I think anybody that would be a good leader would hate is that you have to lose good people in order to save the whole, right? That's a huge, hard decision. I feel that in Lawrence Fishburne's, you know, when he loses Kate Winslet and he knows that they're not going to be able to bring her, he tries his hardest to bring her back no matter what, but they don't have the resources.
Yeah.
But her character touched me so much because she is all like business. She goes in there and she's just cleaning house. She's telling Dave not to touch his face. You know, she's getting the stadiums. I need three more of this. She's like everywhere and she's doing her best job. And when she contracts it, what does she do?
She calls the hotel administration that she's staying at, and she says, I need a list of everybody who came to my room. I also need the waiter who delivered room service.
I need their phone
yesterday.
Numbers, addresses. I need the people that they
absolutely.
Know. She calls the
she's
hey,
protocol.
Come get here. You need to clean this place. And she sees the trucks, the convoy coming for her. And what does she say? She says, I'm sorry, I couldn't complete the job.
Yeah.
That was like, dude, and then in the end when she's dying and she's in the stadium that she made for everybody within the 48 hours and she sees a guy dying next to him and he's like, it's so cold, can you turn the heat on? And the nurse or the nun, she says, I'll see what I can do. Mm-hmm. When she knows she's not coming back and Kate Winslet with her like dying, it seems like her dying like breath, she reaches for her jacket.
She was still trying to help.
And throws the jacket in his direction. Yeah. It was so good because it was like, you knew she couldn't get the jacket to him, but she still tried. And that says a lot about her character, that she was unable to heal these people, but she still tried with her dying breath. And that is a beautiful person, even though there was nothing kind. I guess that was a kindness, but
saying... She also had no outside attachments.
Exactly.
She had no family. She had no friends. She was a career-driven, like, this was her everything. So she... And it's important to have a character like that in a movie like this, because you have to see those may be the people that you depend on the most to be most effective in these situations. If you're talking about an outbreak, I don't necessarily want the Lawrence Fishburne controlling it, who's going to call his wife ahead of everyone and say, hey, tell your friends to get out of Chicago.
That's
because
the human
this shit's
in us.
Getting pretty serious. It's the human in
it's
us.
It's the human flaw in us.
It is the human flaw in us, but it is not egalitarian. It's not it is not fair.
Bro, I do want Lawrence Fishburne running this, because in the end, I believe, I don't know if he gets three needles, but it seems like he only got two, and he gave his to the son of the janitor that said, I got people's too.
But that's the movie part.
No, but that's the thing, though. You understand that.
John Hawkes, by the way, great supporting actor. He's
Perfect
the janitor.
Storm. Yeah. He's been in a bunch of good movies. Yeah. But I was saying that with somebody like that, you understand what you need to do, but there's always human flaw that you, like telling his wife to do that is a major risk for everybody, right? She could have had the disease and broken quarantine. She could have gotten other people sick. She could have caused a mass, you know, hysteria to like just run rampant.
She does. Because she calls her girlfriend.
And so on and so on.
That's how.
Don't repeat this.
Yeah. It's so interesting. This movie is tackling not only the outbreak of disease itself, a physical disease. It's also tackling the way that fear, the tagline for this is nothing spreads like fear.
Exactly.
And it taps into that as well, because you have all these varying perspectives. And with that, you have these varying opinions on what's going on.
Yeah.
And all of those exist too. And you see the good points of some of them and the bad points of the interpretation of the diseases. So who's right and who's wrong and all that? Because with me, Jude Law is like, this is why I like his character, mm-hmm. is because he's trying to be Lawrence Fishburne. And he hasn't been, he doesn't have the access to Lawrence Fishburne's life. He doesn't have the access, that beautiful scene with where he's with Sanjay Gupta, Lawrence Fishburne, mm-hmm. on this nationally syndicated TV show, and they're having this interview. Yeah. And then Jude Law is the call-in interviewer, and they have this back and forth, this confrontation. Mm-hmm. It's my favorite scene in the movie, because it gives Crumwitty, Jude Law's character, the floor with the highest level of power that's like supposed to be the reputable source of information in a situation like this. And Jude Law has positioned himself to be of equal importance on discussing the subject, whether or not it's with integrity, because we disagree.
See, that's where I this that's we why disagree. I say, actually, I like that scene too, but I like it in a different way.
Okay.
I see that scene as the breakdown of media, basically.
Yes.
Because you are now putting this guy here, which is, I'm sorry, but the uneducated public who think they know better than the people that are on the inside. Now, I get it. Like,
I'm not willing to dip him down to that level.
I do.
Uneducated public would be as if Matt Damon was on that show trying to say, you guys let my wife die and you didn't tell me.
No, but see, here's the thing, though. Matt Damon was smart enough to understand why they do the things they do. He didn't get upset when he was quarantined. The only time he got upset was, why aren't you telling me why it is that we're here?
But Jude Law, we're not giving his character enough credit here. He's got a background in this sort of stuff.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though. Like, you must understand that his character, right, doesn't have integrity. He's looking for the come up.
Right.
He is looking for the come up, like you said. But here's why I differ on this, is that Lawrence Fishburne is a responsible man who has, with, you could say, integrity or whatnot, has garnered his right to be there. And he understands that if you give people the whole truth, there's no way to contain this anymore. Like the tagline says, fear spreads the fastest. When that fear spreads, you cannot contain 600 million, 700 million people, okay? No matter how much forces you have, it can be run by the number, right?
250 in the U.S.
Yeah, but we can't recall them all that quick. They're all over the country. People are dealing with stuff. The point is that, yes, there are some things that are not human to do in something like that. Like, quarantine is not an ethical thing.
Martial law.
But in this instance, for the whole to survive,
it made sense.
It's a necessary evil or a necessary thing to do. So it's like, somebody like that.
Is that why their welding apartment complex is shut in Wuhan right now?
Of course. So those things are absolutely like brutal and the worst parts of humanity, mm-hmm. but the logical side, like if we were all like Vulcan or something, we would be like, we have to do this. And the people that were sick would understand to stay there in order to not, like Ely's character, her father does not want her to take off the mask.
Oh, man. Yeah.
And see, that's a responsible person, but most people are not going to choose that. They're going to be over there trying to get out, trying to survive anyway.
You're right.
And that's why with Lawrence Fishburne's character, I give somebody like that a lot of leeway, because that's a lot of responsibility that I know that I would choose the same thing, but I would do it with such a heavy heart, it might destroy me. And I think that that's what it's doing to him in a certain sense. In order to get his humanity back, he understands that from, you could say that a janitor is low. They're not really low. He understands that all human life.
Yeah, this is a guy he has daily conversations with about sports, about family.
Yeah.
I love their opening dialogue where he mentions the ADHD that his son's having, John Hawks' character, mm-hmm. the janitor. And then Lawrence Fishburne says, you know, I will go out and make a recommendation for you. I'll try to find a recommendation. That introduces the character of Lawrence Fishburne pretty strongly as a guy who's always going to try to do the most that he can.
Yes. But, so I do want him there because, you know,
what we need is a hybrid of Jude Law without the greed and Lawrence Fishburne with like,
the Jude Law thing that I think as far as this, I don't think that Lawrence Fishburne was unhonest. I think he made some bad decisions in certain places, but I feel like sometimes being completely honest and truthful can, when it comes to masses of people, can totally mess up everything. I want to believe that the truth sets us all free.
I agree with you.
But I do believe people are not ready sometimes. And that's why he didn't want to let them know until they were ready. Because think about if they let them know where all those research facilities were, they would have gotten ransacked before they could even make enough for everybody. And just the few that got there would have been the ones.
Not necessarily that. The severity of the disease, the honesty of the severity of the epidemic is where I'm tapping into here. Not the resolution. Okay, so here's another reason why I just adore this movie. It is educational, very much educational. It's talking about the Arnott scale. There are scenes where they talk about how the proteins from the virus attach to the cells and how that, the virus
those are real
itself,
programs, by the way.
Those are real programs. The Arnott scale is a real thing. The reproductive scalability of it, I think, is what it is.
Even
the reproductive rate of the virus. Yes. The respirators.
You know, the ones, the actual air being fed into the people's costumes, that's a real thing. Like, they would not go in there with no air being put into, because if you watch a lot of the older epidemic movies.
Andromeda Strain.
Yeah, they go in there with just a suit, but where are you getting oxygen, bro?
Right.
Like, you need something to breathe air in, and it gets fed into their helmets now.
Yes.
So, I really like
the safety levels of the labs as well that we've hinted at before, the level 3 pathogen labs versus level 4s, like the one in Wuhan.
Yeah, and dude, like the one in Wuhan, right? The Resident Evil. Dude, yeah. It's getting crazy. And you know what's funny? I think they said it. What I loved about the publicity, not loved, but this is crazy why it's so parallel. They were like, it's coming from the bats and the pigs being sold at this market or something, right?
Much.
What did it say? That's what they said, though. And I'm like, that's exactly what this movie said was the bats and the pigs.
And it comes full circle at the end, and it shows you actually the transmission of the virus itself. It's just a really amazing movie. Also, there's the little tidbits of information that are kind of daunting to even the casual moviegoer, like the number of times that people touch their face on a daily basis when they go through that kind of stuff. And I watched the 3-minute review online from one of those guys, Jeremy Johns, I think it is, and he was mentioning how he was watching Contagion, and as he was watching it, he was ripping open a pack of Mike and Ikes with his lips in the theater with his teeth, and that scene came on, and it's just like, there's so many everyday little things that we do that are irrespective of the larger, it's just scary how quickly something like this can get out of hand.
It's the scariest serial killer there is when you think about it.
The virus. Casinos, yeah, for sure. The casinos shutting down. The casino that Gwyneth Paltrow's in Macau, those casinos are shut down right now in Macau, in real life.
I believe it.
There's some uncanny parallels with the first 45 minutes of this movie.
I think and we haven't even gone into the guy who wrote this, by the way.
Oh, man, we need to.
His name is Scott Z. Burns, right? He wrote a lot, and he hasn't wrote a lot of movies, but you can tell that he and Steven Soderbergh have definitely remained friends, I would say. So he wrote this movie called PU 239 in 06. Then he was, and he didn't write it. He was a screenplay writer.
Oh, okay.
So there's this difference, but he also wrote the screenplay for The Bourne Ultimatum, or was a screenplay writer on there. That's where I think their friendship started. Because after that, The Informant they did together,
Matt
Side
Damon
Effects
again.
That they did together, which was Jude Law as well, Side Effects, The Mercy, The Report, and The Laundromat. So a lot of those movies,
they sound like a lot of real, based on real life stories.
Well, Side Effects, that's
prescription
a great movie.
Medication. Yeah, check that out. And The Informant is about whistleblowers within. I want to say it's what's the company? Not Monsanto, but it's like a food allergy story where there were like allergens being deliberately put in in large products. Don't quote me on this. I have never seen The Informant, but I remember it historically being with Matt Damon as a whistleblower within a large food production company in the U.S. that was poisoning people.
Yeah, it's a good movie. Watch it. But in any case, I think the writer probably has done research on medical, the protocols, what's going on.
With that list, I would go with that.
Yeah, so I really enjoyed the non-nonsense in this movie, because people die. Like the Kate Winslet character, she dies.
This should be
halfway through the movie.
Yeah.
And she's really only there for like 10, 20 minutes, maybe at the max. Not even 20 minutes full screen time, probably. But it hit hard because it's like, okay, Kate Winslet's coming in. This is what's going to happen. She's almost like brought in as, this is the hero. She's going to clean up everything. She's going to do it.
Matt Damon loses half of his family in the first 10.
Yes.
It's remorseless. It is unsympathetic of what you want to see turn out, because that's the way this stuff
works. Viruses do not care about your ethics, morality, or God. It's just going to happen. They are trying to survive too.
Yeah.
Like, right? Viruses are just trying to take over a host
so
they can survive.
There's this microbial world that kind of works very similar to how we work, and it's all about how do I keep myself alive and the ones that I love. And I guess I'm in the viral world, it's the reproduction of the virus itself, and it just cares about that.
Mm-hmm. And honestly, I think the numbers are too small
this movie.
Yeah, for a virus that moves that quickly, it would have globally dominated within a 3-month span.
I personally think it did dominate though. Well, the streets were dead.
Yes, but I'm saying that
US cities,
the way that our government would, like the way how slow it reacts, like trying not to, let's not cause a stir, let's try to keep it under wraps, that's why they do. I think that all the protocols that they would have gone through, that if how quickly this thing incubated and came about, like you said, your criticism was the incubation period was way too small.
It was way too small for...
But if we were doing this realistically and that really did happen, because I do believe viruses...
There's never been a mortality rate of over 8% in
8%
the modern world.
8% is a lot.
In this movie, it's 30%.
Yes.
So that was a little far-fetched for my liking.
I think that we're being, how do you say it?
Well, they also said
a little
one out of
positive about this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, I really do think we're being positive. And that's, I mean, think about what could happen if they didn't quarantine people, right? People could just leave and go into the woods, infect animals or whatever, man. It could, because they were constrained to touch. So that, think about if something were to go airborne, right? Mm-hmm. Like an outbreak. There'd be so much, like,
well, there's that discussion about the virus surviving on surfaces. Mm-hmm. I forget the terminology they used.
Yeah.
It was something really colloquial that the CDC guys threw around. Lumens, not lumens.
Lumens is a measurement of light.
Okay. it was something, it was
how
a term that
is.
Only they knew about. And I was like, I found that very fascinating, because there is that viruses, like you said, are trying to figure us out more and more. And our immune systems are improving. So just logically speaking, if you talk about the human resistance to this stuff gaining over time, the opposite is going to happen as well, and the viruses are going to get more serious quicker, just like in anything.
It's a super
bug. Technology gets better because our minds get better at realizing the technology. It's the same sort of relationship.
Well, it's the mutation. It's not really that we're always trying to figure things out.
But who's mutating first?
But
is
that's
it
what
our
I'm
immune
saying.
Systems that are getting better, or is it the viruses that are getting worse?
It's both, because think about this, like the super
they
bug
work in
thing,
tandem.
Right? People that are spraying Lysol on their homes all the time, well, the 0.01% that survive, they figure out how to survive that, and they become super bugs, right? That's what we're becoming so good that the 0.01% that's not eradicated, they are coming back with a vengeance.
Kills 99% of the germs. Oh yeah, well it's the 1% you need to worry about.
Yeah, because the 1% figured it out and they're gonna come back with new weapons and take out your immune system.
And that 1% is still millions of bacteria, by the way. So yes. Next time you buy that bottle of Lysol, remember this film room episode.
Yeah, they got a whole crew, man. You gotta watch out.
You shouldn't worry about the 99%.
No, you'll kill those. In fact, just rub a little dirt in your face to get your immune system up. Why don't you?
Absolutely.
I mean, that's where your food comes from anyways. I always felt that was kind of weird. Like if you drop a potato on the floor, I'm like, it's grown in...
out of the ground?
Yeah.
Well, on the topic of disease, it's real strange to me because I drive a lot and commute a lot. So I use a lot of public restrooms. I think there should be a serious revamping of cleanliness when it comes to those things, because I go to the sink after I pee or do whatever.
But touching the sink, bro.
And then touching the sink itself is bad, but then I wash my hands and then I scrub them with soap and then I wipe the towels.
You touch the sink again to turn it off, remember?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But even worse, after I clean my hands, I touch the door where I'm like crossing my fingers that the guy who just took a crap actually did wash his hands and didn't just walk out. Honestly, it's weird, man. It's a conundrum.
I don't touch that handle. Like, I'm weird about that.
Oh, I am too.
I actually get the paper or I kick it open or my elbow or something.
Yeah. I wanted to paint this as if I'm still making all these mistakes, but over the last 5 to 10 years, I've drastically changed. When I walk into a gas station, I use my foot to open the doors. There's the metal strips at the bottom of the glass windows. Mm-hmm. I just kick them open. I don't care what it looks like. I don't want to touch these things very much. When I just went into a Dollar Tree the other day and I saw 90% of their boxes are imported from China. All of them. We're talking about paints. We're talking about some actual foods that Dollar Tree has, some crafts and things like that. I know the viruses can't survive on surfaces for longer than 10 days, according to the CDC.
Yeah, but a new virus survived off of the carcasses of the dead virus, and now it's even worse when it got here.
So, man, I'm not playing around with any of this stuff. I am treating everyone out there in that world as if they are a carrier of something that could cripple me. And
it's true, bro. And I mean, it is.
It's got to be treated with some sense of diligence to prevent it from hitting home.
What really scares me is the whole global warming thing. You know, actually unfreezing a lot of the
viruses in Antarctica.
They got new stuff coming. They're like, what the heck is this?
You'd be a good fit for meandering, Philip. Have I told you that before?
Yeah, I know you have. Yeah. But I'm just saying that, like, that's what really scares me. What's frozen in... It's going to be, like, freaking the thing coming out of there, man. Like, we're not ready.
The thing in microbial
No, the thing,
sense.
Like, as far as...
I don't think it's going to be a 10,000-pound squid that's going to emerge from there.
No, you get it. The thing is, like, a small mimic thing, right? And it's going to affect the ocean life, and we eat the ocean life with the nuclear, you know, coming out of Fukushima. It's like so much craziness going on, bro. We're gonna have to grow our own fish.
Off mic, we were talking about how climate is really conducive to the severity of the disease and the pathogens available. I lived in Montreal for 15 years and we didn't worry about getting sick seriously all too much because the weather itself was 8 months of winter, so you could sort of quarantine. When you got sick, of course, but you weren't getting sick with these disgusting subtropical diseases
like
that
gonorrhea
or Ebola. Ebola can't survive in cold climates. It's just part of the bug. It just can't do it. It can't even spread to those
comes from
areas.
Hot, most, yeah, like South Pacific.
Yeah, the South Pacific.
South America. You get a lot
the
of...
African, the Western African coast. These are humid, dishes. Gross... areas, climatologically speaking, that are conducive of the weirdest strains of viruses developing.
Things we don't even know yet.
Things we don't know how to figure out.
I mean, hell, we haven't even found all the animals and the insects in the Amazon. You think we're going to find the viruses that probably live there?
So when you say that the Antarctic basins are melting away, yeah, that is pretty scary to think. Yeah. If in 1,000 years' time, the Antarctic area is... Well, they just had a record high in February of 67 degrees, not too long ago, less than a couple of days ago. So reference that for how serious that stuff's going.
And you know, those are the Titans. Those are the 1% that were still roaming in the ice times, and they barely died. Like, oh, yep. That's what I worry about. So for me, man,
our immune systems better get caught up.
There'll be one Neo that can like survive, and maybe one other woman, and that's how we rebuild.
And we won't be able to take their blood and inject it into everyone.
No. And it all was because of Jude Law selling that Forsythia.
It was
a bad guy.
Yeah. So we
plus his teeth. Let's not forget about his teeth in this movie.
Well, those are his teeth.
Those aren't his real teeth.
No, no. I didn't know that. Did you do the research here?
Is really like to the side, bro.
Why'd they add that?
I don't know, man. Maybe it was his personal choice. I have no idea. Maybe he's trying to look like David Letterman. I don't know. But his teeth were really jacked up in the front. Those aren't his real
his
teeth.
His major canines.
Like one tooth. No, not canine. One of his front teeth is over the other one. Those are your twisted. Canines. No, the canines are these.
Oh, shit.
The front are incisors.
Okay. Don't come to us for... don't come to the film
don't
room.
Don't come to Sasha
Yeah, don't come for me for expertise on the anatomy of teeth.
Not your orthodontist.
Nope. All right. yeah, we didn't go scene by scene with this movie, and I don't want to because it is such a fast-moving, swift film that, especially with the tone out there right now, educate yourself. I wanted to say that this is one of those movies that I hope science classes in the early days. It's PG-13. There should be no reason why this movie is not shown to 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th graders in every realm of science.
You think they're ready, though?
Yes.
You think that 6th graders?
They're going to go home, and they're going to say, Mom, Dad, what can you tell me more about this? I watched this movie, Contagion. And they're going to force the issue
with
their
parents.
Maybe
9th or 10th grade, man. When they go through sex ed, go ahead and show them this. Like, that's what I would
do. They're not going through sex ed in the 6th grade?
Honestly, I don't even know, bro. It's been a long time since I've been out of school. But, you know, I really like this movie. For one, it is educational. Two, it moves rapid. It's a great film by Steven Soderbergh. And you know, I didn't even say this, but the cinematographer, I'm going to go over who the cinematographer is, and his name is Peter Andrews. This is what's really important. Peter Andrews is Steven Soderbergh.
Whoa.
So he also goes by the name sometimes Marianne Bernard.
What are these called? Pen names?
Yeah, something like that. Well, the main reason why he does this, well, first he's giving tribute to his mother and father. Those are Peter Andrews is his father's first two names, and then Marianne Bernard was his mother's maiden name. But the main thing is because he believes that his name shouldn't show more than once in his movies. He doesn't want his name to be like directed, edited, written by, all these things, because he writes a lot of his own stuff. So he will have these placeholder names in place. But it's pretty much known that he does it, and he just wants to make it look professional. It's something that even Robert Rodriguez did in his first movie, El Mariachi. If you watch it, like in the credits, the original credits, it has all these random names he just put there because he didn't want the studios to know he did everything himself for $7,000. He wanted it to like
make it known that.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
So most of the stuff he did himself, they're just random names. I think it's important to know that he is a cinematographer, and we even saw some of the behind-the-scenes stuff, and we see him actually holding the camera, which is super hard to, and I always find this really hard if you're a director and the cinematographer, which happens to happen on a lot of independent films. It's hard to judge the performance while you're trying to get the technical side, like pulling focus, you know, getting
worried about the technical specs. Yes, just as much as the performance. So man, what a balance that has to be.
I give him all the respect in the world for doing that. And he's a phenomenal filmmaker.
He's Criterion level. I don't know why Criterion hasn't picked him up and highlighted his films, because there's a lot of Soderbergh stuff early on in his career that you rounded off that I would like to revisit because of just the stuff in the last 15 years. I like so much of his. I want to rewatch Aaron Brockovich now. I want to watch Traffic again now, because some of these movies are providing insights into the details of these things that we as everyday Americans may not have access to and the privy to dissect. Well, we do in the information age, but you have to still seek it out. And it's a lot easier to sit down and let a movie tell you. And then it is a slippery slope, because you get the folks who are like, you know, don't base your root knowledge of a topic on a movie. Obviously not. But once you have a decent understanding of like the drug trade, yeah, watching Traffic amplifies that a little bit and adds on. Once you have a decent understanding of epidemiology and how diseases spread and how the CDC and the WHO works, which I've always been fascinated. Contagion came along and it's like, oh, damn. Okay, this is adding a level of my understanding to this world. Mm-hmm. And so, again, that's why I think it works well for the younger crowd as well, because it's not like anybody's going to...
They're not bullshitting you.
Yeah.
That's what we appreciate.
An eighth grader is not going to watch Contagion and be able to sway your opinion on, oh, man, this could happen. This is dangerous. It's happening right now. But they are going to watch Contagion and then be more interested in the world of Contagion, in my opinion. So...
Yeah. It'll be a lot more germaphobes. That's for sure. Maybe good. Things will be
that's
cleaner.
That's a good thing.
And you know... I think Steven Soderbergh, honestly, when I look at his work and, you know, I think of you as a friend, I think Steven Soderbergh is probably the most, for me, I think for you, is the kind of filmmaker, if you ever became a film director, you'd be Steven Soderbergh.
100%.
You'd be wanting to do stories like this.
We
these
talked
are
about
the stories that matter to you, right?
These are the ones that matter to me. And I'm glad you mentioned this because earlier on in this episode, I was thinking to myself, I want Steven Soderbergh to make movies about... And then my mind came up with a list of 15 or 20 topics.
We need to get a hold of him.
Yeah.
Get that list to him, bro.
We need to have a seat with him and discuss, you know, what are you going to do in the twilight of your career here? Because the limits are endless and you can be much more than just a film director. You can be an educator. You can be a whistleblower of sorts in a respective way, like informationally speaking. And so, yeah, I watched Unsane recently, and I can't recommend that one enough. But
maybe he's your favorite, bro.
He's not my favorite director.
But maybe he is.
He's not.
Maybe in the end of his career.
Well, Tony Scott is. Rest in peace, Tony Scott. Yeah. But
you are an action guy.
Yeah, I'm an action guy at the end of the day.
I'm a drama guy.
And and Unsane, just in closing, is the perfect complement to Contagion because it's a look at the mental health epidemic of the last 10 to 15 years. Mm. And it also gives you varying perspectives of that from the central character, but it's all filmed on an iPhone. Yeah. So Steven Soderbergh says, you can do this too.
Yeah. Well, I hate it when they say it was filmed on an iPhone. Yes, the sensor was the iPhone, but the lenses they put on the iPhone and the stuff that they use, it's like still $1 million.
Okay.
Like the stuff, the
lenses. Well, thank you for acting, providing the clarity there because, yeah.
Yeah, that's why it looks 100 times better than your iPhone.
Have you seen
that
movie?
I promise you. I haven't seen it, but I already know of it. Like, I know every movie that's been filmed with the iPhone, like Tangerine and stuff.
Yeah.
And Tangerine's probably the closest you can come to really filming
it's on
your
my
iPhone.
Voodoo, dog. Take advantage of it.
Yeah. So I'll watch it. Yeah.
It's on my Voodoo.
I did want to go over a little bit, too, about the budget of this film. The budget was $60
million. That's pretty good.
It's really low for the star power. So you can understand, like, Steven Soderbergh, people want to work with him.
Yeah.
There's no way Kate Winslet, Lawrence Fishburne, Matt Damon.
Yeah, you got 10 A-listers in this movie
you
alone.
You got three Academy Cranston. Award nominees. You got three Academy Award winners. I mean, it's just crazy. On a $60 million film budget, okay, the type of wizardry he must have been able to pull, I mean, think about that. If you're the type of director that everybody wants to work for, you're pretty good then.
Also, the locales in this movie are all
everywhere,
over the world.
Yeah.
Some of these scenes do take place in Hong Kong. I'm not going to say the
and
casino
San Francisco.
Scenes. The casino scenes with Gwyneth Paltrow are probably a set.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm willing to bet it looked real. I think he films in real casinos a lot of times.
Yeah.
I mean, Ocean's 11 and then Ocean's 13, he films in Macau,
true.
Right?
Yeah,
I mean,
that's true.
He probably has these connections already.
Right.
So I'm willing to believe, and I think he's the type of person that likes to film on location. If you notice his films, they're always out and about. He almost never films in a studio. I don't think he likes it. And I don't think he's the kind of director that likes studio films. He likes to, you know, get in the grittiness. I mean, he's filming it. He's literally the cameraman for his own films. That's freaking independent, like indie film hustle if I ever heard of it.
You know who I believe went to Steven Soderbergh's film school? Denis Villeneuve, or did he actually like go to a film? No, I mean like...
I think that was his mentor too.
Yeah, I mean just...
he was mentored by
him. That's crazy because I didn't know
I'm pretty
sure. But when I compared the two's visual styles and even the topics that they want to discuss, Sicario, for example, that's like the evolution of Traffic.
Kind of, yeah. I think Denis
Villeneuve
is more of a chill Like he has his inner chronometer inside of him. His pacing is much more drawn out, almost like M. Night Shyamalan type of drawn outness. While Steven Soderbergh's like jazz, just keep going fast, 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 and it's streamlined. It's so nice that you that's why you're hypnotized. It's so quick that you don't have time to look away because this thing is so musically like it's like watching Mozart's Fifth. He's so great. And I'm sorry, I'm coming off of a big fanboy for Steven Soderbergh, but he is one of the best filmmakers out there, I think, and important as well.
I want to see more from him. I do want to see Denis Villeneuve tackle in his career an epidemic movie of this nature. I think he will as well. But that's an interesting point, and maybe in closing,
he's doing Dune, so it's kind of.
You're right.
He's dipping his toe. But by the way, this movie actually made $136.5 million.
It was very zeitgeisty at the time, so, coming off H1N1. People were interested in this sort of stuff, and you know, true to life epidemic movies don't come along very often. You've got prior to Outbreak, I can name maybe Andromeda Strain. There's this really unheralded gem from this decade called The Bay, which was directed by, I will figure that one out.
I think you're leaving out a lot of movies like Cabin Fever.
Okay.
You could call that an epidemic, bro.
I could.
It comes off like a horror movie, but it's really an epidemic, dude. Like, oh my God, when he falls into that lake with a dead body and that's what's creating everybody.
And
like,
all the zombie movies, of course, those are the easy on-ramps for storytellers to say, I want to tell a disease story, but I want Hollywood to back me up. Okay, zombies are going to do it for us.
When you think about it, zombies are really the manifestation of a virus, right? Yeah, in Hollywood.
Brain eating.
It's the best way.
The way the virus works.
Yeah. So George Romero really is the godfather of virus movies when you think about it.
One of the gripping scenes in Contagion we left out is when they saw Gwyneth Paltrow's head open and they look at her brain.
My God, yes.
And my wife was watching this. She said, "I want to know what they saw."
Me too.
I tell you what they saw. They saw a flesh eating or a brain eating bacteria that had either turned the brain partially black or had removed a large chunk of her brain because.
It has to be more than that because X puts holes in your brains and that wouldn't have done that.
Well, I think it turned it like a dark color. I think it was something startling that was visible with the naked eye.
What was in there was what was in Wallace's briefcase in Pulp Fiction. Okay? That's exactly what he just did to us.
Gold?
Without you. I think that was his little tribute to Pulp Fiction. Like, I don't need to show them.
But I connect that with the zombie discussion because, yeah, zombies are a physical manifestation of what a virus actually does.
Yeah. It's a manifestation to glitz in Hollywood, like get it actiony, right?
Yes.
Because when you look, it's kind of like watching a hacking movie, right? Do you really want to watch somebody hack? It's not very fun.
No, you want to see Swordfish where Hugh Jackman's getting blown by Halle Berry underneath the...
No, the two, it was a different girl.
Oh, that's right.
Halle Berry just showed her boobs for no reason.
Sorry, Halle.
Yeah. We still love you, though. Even more, really, yeah.
But I do want to see more Contagion-like movies. As the interest for the real world epidemics rises, and I believe it will because the disclosure of them will rise over the century. As the century progresses, we've talked about how epidemics are going to get worse, just climate-wise, just human immune system versus what they do. It's an inevitability to a certain degree.
Yeah, well,
and so I'd like to see more accurate representation that is
this is the most
hell-bent on educational. Yes, it is, but it's 9 years old, and I'm ready for another one.
Yeah, and you know, that's another reason.
Denis Villeneuve.
But people like Soderbergh, I think that they understand that a lot of times they are good authorities on these matters.
Yes.
I think they understand that their communication skills in a movie is much better than an hour and a half lecture in school sometimes, you know?
Bet.
So we trust them to do the research to get most of it right at this point. So when you look at movies like this, you can't just think of any movie. You got to trust a filmmaker that they really are trying to do this right. And Steven Soderbergh is one of those credible directors out there that I'm like, you know what? I trust what he's saying.
Yes.
Even when you do the research on this, and I've seen there's like a YouTube series out there that's like professionals
versus Contagion.
Just professionals on anything, whether it was like a hunter on these movies, like these scenes and how it would actually happen. Well, they have one on Contagion or all the epidemic movies where a CDC guy who's actually talking about what they would do.
Yeah.
This is kind of why I know some of the inconsistencies in the movie because he's talking about it.
One thing that I found...
Go check it out, by the way.
Do check it out. Do you have specific recommendations?
I think it was... I don't know if it was by GQ, but there was there's two YouTube people. There's GQ does it, and then some other person does it. So you'll see the two that come up.
Because what I was going to say, most of these episodes that we do, unless it's a movie that I just know up and down, I don't seek out a lot of supplementary material unless it's from someone involved in the movie. And on this Blu-ray, there's no director's commentary. They're very light on the features. It's like 12 minutes of special features. Mm-hmm. So then I did turn to YouTube to get some additional perspective, and there's not a lot there either because, and I think I figured it out, because there aren't a lot of people that are willing to say, oh, I'm a voice of authority on what this movie is discussing. And that's why, like you just said, Steven Soderbergh, he may not be an epidemiologist, but he's certainly not going to go into a movie like Contagion, and the screenwriter for that matter is not going to go into writing this story without doing their due diligence and getting actual feedback. Yeah. So I'm going to call out my my co-host here in closing for meandering. His name's Morgan. Great show. Love what we do. And we talk about the coronavirus in real time, I'd like to say. So if you'd like to check that out, check it out. But he equated this movie to actual fear-mongering in a sense that if somebody watches this, they could think it's a lot more serious than that the problem out there with viral plagues and epidemics is a lot more serious than it really is. Yeah, that's what it's supposed to do. Because everybody's a zombie to that fact. They're basically turned off to that notion. So it's supposed to flip your switch on.
Yeah, well, I agree with you, and I kind of disagree with him, because it is more serious than what it portrays.
It is more serious than what the layman thinks.
Well, not even, yeah, well, it is literally life and death.
He's not a layman on it. He's very, he knows a lot of the intricacies, but he is... He is
but
a,
people don't wash their man. I've seen so many people that don't wash their hands in the theater or like in the bathroom. Dude, it is serious. People don't care. Believe in germs at this point.
We're
devolving.
We need like augmented reality that shows us how clean or dirty a human being is.
Well, they did that actually for this film.
They
actually, what they did was they put petri dishes. I forget in what department store over a week. This petri dish like was touched by people's hands and stuff, and how quickly it spread. And they put it, they arranged it in a way where it said Contagion. They were promoting the movie with this contagious petri dish of bacteria that grew over the week, which is freaking insane when you think about it. But they did just that. I mean, people have been doing experiments online, like the teacher that showed the touching of the hands after touching the sandwich after they washed their hands. Somebody that didn't, somebody whatever, and multiple hands. And I think people do need to wake up, and this movie was based off of a real virus, by the way.
It's the MERV virus, right?
No, it's I don't know what it was called. It was called the consultant. So I'll go over this. The consultant for doctor is Dr. Ian Lipfin. Look, he's a professor of epidemiology at Columbia University of Mailman School of Public Health.
Okay.
This virus was created from the traits of Nipah virus from Malaysia in the late 1990s.
Ah, yes, that's right.
So this is pretty close to what. Honestly, I think that
it's bad over there. It's 28
there's
days
people
later.
Leaving.
It's 28 days later, minus the people running around trying to kill you.
Yeah, it's World War Z, bro.
World War Z without the piles of people trying to kill you.
Without the 12 seconds.
Yeah, it's important. It's important to note zombies, unless we're talking about like way down the line and some weird sort of mutated disease, zombies aren't realistic. It's what happens to the brains of those people that is realistic, and the quickness and the swiftness of these pandemic like
rabies. Rabies is really just, zombies are really just rabies. That's what it really comes from, rabies and then meningitis, you know? So that's where those. I mean, all these things that we see on screen are somewhat of like a concoction of real life of some sort. I mean, all science fiction really comes from some sort of truth, right?
Yes.
So when we see this, yes, it is not a true story, but it's so close. You could just attach this story to any outbreak, the Spanish influenza. And you know, people, they give nicknames to things like, oh, it's the flu virus, right?
Yeah.
That's influenza, bro. That's a little bit more serious. Let's go ahead and get all the syllables out on this thing to make it as serious. Because that's when we start calling it you know, cute things like the flu or, you know, the measles, the bumps.
Yeah,
the
no
mumps.
Big deal. It does desensate or not desensationalizes, but it makes it common.
Yeah, and it's not. And I mean, people die from influenza.
The common flu kills 60,000 people a year. Mm-hmm. The common strain of the seasonal, there's another word, seasonal. So they sort of condition the American public into expecting this on a routine basis. And on a yearly basis, you're talking 60 to 80,000 people, 19 million cases in the last year. Yeah, this is as serious as it gets when it comes to something that we can predict. Now, what's going on overseas? Unpredictable. It's novel.
We can predict it in a sense that we know China's lying about it. They're trying to keep things on the down low, like any government would. But I think China's a little bit on a higher level of trying to control things. You know, it being a communist country.
You see
and
that
all.
In the movie Contagion too, yes. Where
China is
they
the
have
guys.
Back and forth. They have back and forths. The Chinese government and the American government. This is pure insight.
They're denying.
Yeah, China says. As soon as they're ready to say Hong Kong is the originating point and that it started
there? No, they said that it happened before Hong Kong and Macau. That's what they were trying to say.
Oh, I see.
And he says, be very careful with your allegations.
Careful with... These are serious allegations that you're about to make. And that in itself, just that dialogue had to be researched. There's a route to that dialogue. Why is the Chinese government that concerned with the way that it's phrased? Well, because, yeah.
We know... Look, I don't mean to bash China, but we know... And if you don't know, the Spanish influenza started in China. Okay, they only called it the Spanish flu because Spain was the first one to say we have a problem. Yeah. There's something going down. But but thousands of people had already died in China.
It
from
originated,
it, and they do not want anything associated with not the greatness of China.
Yeah.
So we already have like empirical evidence that China does this.
We have a precedent.
And it wasn't that long. No, it's empirical evidence. It's real evidence. I'm saying that this is fact, and China's doing it right now again.
100 years later.
Yeah, they're not releasing the right numbers because they don't want to let everybody know it's worse than it is.
Much worse.
Much worse.
And you have to rely on the Jude Laws out there.
Yes. I don't rely on them, though, because they're selling me forsythia.
What about the good Jude Laws?
There are good Jude Laws, but
meandering is a good Jude Law.
Yes, but you can say
tune in on a weekly basis.
But you remember, talking heads are different than real journalism, right? So you have to be careful with that because a lot of news stations have talking heads. They're not journalists. They're saying opinions, not facts.
Right.
So even meandering could be a lot of opinions.
Oh, we're trying to blend it halfway.
Yeah, no. Give the facts, opinions, but a lot of these guys just say opinions. And that's what I want to say is that with China, you could tell from that dialogue that there were like, well, you can't see a virus on videotape, even though they had videotape of them having contact with so many of the people. And this is where it started from, originated. Yeah. They had so much data and they are denying it like they are on a trial.
Yeah, they're denying the dot connectors whose job it is to connect the dots. And it's like,
how can you do
in order to progress? We have to just connect the dots and be okay with however they connect. China.
It's Chernobyl all over again, really, when you think about it. A lot of countries that seem to be caught up in the greatness of the country rather than the people, which really is the
pride,
country.
The ego, the...
Even America does
scale
it.
Up. They America, scale up all the way.
America does it. Everybody does. So I'm
it's
not...
It's all about image. So
it
if,
is image,
if,
yes.
And if you need to understand the conversation we're having on a more local level, just take a look around at some of your friends and family who, if you began to chip away at some of the things that are important to their image and you address some of the truths there, you quickly build an enemy. And that scales its way up to how governments interact, how countries handle some of this stuff. Get better friends.
I'm just saying, if you were, and also be a better person, if you're confronted with something that you built a foundation on and it's true or it's not true, be ready to get rid of it and start anew.
And
man,
if it's true,
rebuild.
Hold your ground and represent that sense
of honesty. Well,
everybody
holds their ground. That's the thing. I'm just saying, you know, questioning it, you know, really think about the truth of it. But with this movie, though, I really loved it, man. I think a lot of people are watching this right now because of the flu virus, because of the coronavirus.
Sure.
And I think that's why we're doing it because, hey man, if it's on your mind,
it's educational.
We want to be part of that.
And
right?
It is very educational too. So if you're tired of all the, Twitter videos that you can't verify coming from China, if you're tired of the CNN mainstream, you can dial it back 9 years, watch this movie, and then you can assess everything that's happening in real time and say, okay, I'm going to go with I'm going to go with what Contagion taught me, and I'm going to apply a lot of the logic that went into making this movie comparatively to what's going on in the real world. So, yeah, that's what I think movies like this are meant to be, especially when they're helmed by, yeah, geniuses of their field.
Yeah, and like we were talking about earlier, that there's a couple of characters that we didn't get to.
Yeah,
Marion Cotillard is one of them.
She's also an epidemiologist, but she's a WHO epidemiologist.
Yes,
or she's I have her actual title here. It's epidemiologist.
she
I was right.
She gets kidnapped by the Chinese. A rogue
Chinese group of scientists, yeah, who are feeling the impact of the disease on a very close to home level, like, yes, in their village on the outskirts of the bigger town. Mm-hmm. And they have no help there. And like 50% of their population's just died, yeah, out. And so they do kidnap her character to sort of get some control over the situation locally. But her story arc doesn't really go. Her story arc's one of the forgettable ones.
Yeah, which is unfortunate because really it's about the village that everybody's died except for the children.
Yes.
And they're trying to keep them. And so she's been there for months until they come up with a vaccine. Yeah. And then, you know,
nobody noticed that she disappeared off the charts.
I'm sure they did. I mean, at this point they're dealing with so much, you know.
Yeah.
And they basically they hold her hostage for the vaccines, but they give them placebos,
right,
probably full of forsythia. And sorry, man, I got to dig at Jude Law's
character. Sorry, man. There are I believe that we have access to all of the remedies for these things already somehow.
Oh, I believe you. I mean, one of the things, you know, that aspirin was made from a white willow tree. You can take that from the bark. But it's just that science has gotten it better, because if you eat too much of that bark, you will get ulcers.
That's fair.
So you get real bad stomach ulcers. Even today, if you take a lot of aspirin, you get bad stomach ulcers. But they've had inhibitors added to it to make it to where it's more digestible.
Sure.
It's easier on you, but it does.
Well, you take a look at
what pain medication.
You take a look at the last 40 years and the evolution of marijuana and the treatment of marijuana for a lot of these illnesses and the way that it's medically prescribed. That's been around for thousands, yeah, of years, so we're just tapping into the potential.
That one's backwards.
There.
Like, we've, yeah, had all that knowledge, but the natural one is better. Look,
I need Soderbergh to make a marijuana industry movie.
Probably, but there's a, you know, everything is made from nature at some point. It's whether we can refine, yeah, it and have it better to be digested or however we intake it. So I like that stuff, man. I like learning about it. I mean, yes, there's homeopathy stuff, but I think that medicine can make it better. I do believe that, yes, that the big pharma company is controlling a lot of things. So
yeah,
there's a lot of bad stuff for you out there. Like,
that's,
you know,
the world
like
we
opioids.
Built, man. That's the world we built.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not a perfect system, but it's gotten us way farther than anything else. So I can't fault it too much, but you know, so you have to take everything with a grain of salt. This movie definitely opened my eyes to the way that things would unravel. And I do believe that, honestly, civilization would unravel a lot faster. I think in about 3 days, you'd start seeing looting on a bigger level. And that's what I do believe in, the 3-day rule for me. If food, anything gets stopped for 3 days, you got to hunker down.
Real quick.
Yeah. Be sure to have yourself a weapon and protect your family, you know, of some sort.
I've already extended the invite. We've got a secret location in the hills of the mountains of Canada. So
if we can make it there without
dying. We're there, man. We can shelter 30 to 60 people, and I've already got the list. So.
All right, I got you. But and that's what I mean, man. Like, I feel like civilization's always on the cusp. I mean, we got so many things that we don't know that could go off go off. I mean, and the virus thing, it's scary because you can't really, it's like Michael Myers. You can shoot it, you can do all that. It's going to come back, right? It's like this stalker that you can't see.
I like it.
Yep. You know, it really is a scary movie. And yeah, watch this movie, man. I'm going to wrap it up. You got anything else?
The only other thing I want to mention is, have you played a video game called The Division?
Yes.
All right.
The first one.
Yeah. Do you remember the intro video of The Division?
No, it's been a long time. They're already on
Division
2.
It was the dollar flu. It was a biological weapon that they put on dollar bills right in time for Black Friday so that it spread the virus that way. Yeah, scary stuff. The only... I want to mention the accuracy of that game when it comes to how the situation pans out is very similar to Contagion. The streets are empty. The division looks more at the response team to what would happen if Contagion kept getting worse and worse. Because in Contagion, things eventually level out and they get better. But this is like, it's the most suitable comparison that I can get from another art form. So yeah, I want to throw that out there.
I think that would be my biggest criticism of the movie, yeah, is that they still end with a happy
very
ending.
Quickly too. Very, yeah, quickly.
It's like it
you,
man,
went from 2.5 million deaths to, okay, now the vaccine's being mass, yeah, produced and everything's okay.
And you get the prom night with the daughter and the boyfriend, yeah, that could have been, I think, honestly, it was a little too happy. Maybe because he didn't want everybody to leave, or maybe leave the theater with like being down and scared, yeah, right, too much, or maybe the studio execs were like, "Hey, dude, we need something to uplift these spirits."
It was Warner Brothers at the end of the day, so it's got to have some.
I wouldn't, you know, Warner Brothers has a long history of giving you the hard movie, like Chinatown, and okay, they built their name on some Batman. You know, they're not always the happy ending, so. I mean, it was kind of a bittersweet ending. A lot of people died along the way, but in the end, something like that probably would not have been figured out.
I agree.
Something that quick and that hard-hitting would have killed us all. I don't think there's somebody smart enough to adapt.
A 30 to 40% mortality rate? Yes. Yeah, that's an earth killer. And so, yeah.
So, yeah, I feel like that would be
that's
the
Thanos.
Biggest criticism.
That's,
yeah,
Thanos.
More than Thanos. It'd be more than half of the population's worse.
Fair.
So, I feel that, you know, I know that sounds bad, I guess, to say, but I feel like in real life, humanity would not rise to that occasion. Nature is too smart for us. It's always going to wipe us out at some point. You know, it's too big for us, mm-hmm, at this point in our juncture of humanity. And I really don't think that we would be able to roll with the punches on that, because, yeah, when you think about it,
nature
CDC,
is what we're worried about technology becoming.
Yeah, I guess so. But CDC and the WHO, they have to roll with the punches. They can't anticipate something like this. They have to get it and then figure it out. So they literally have to be the best defensive boxers in the world. They have to be a Mayweather, and they have to be like 51-0 at this, yeah, point, or it'll be a world killer, right?
Yeah.
So I feel bad for the CDC and the WHO, because you know what? I do feel like they have been portrayed so many times as these guys that don't know what they're doing. They do these unethical things, but they have these protocols are in place because somebody,
some people there
the foresight
do know what they're doing. Yes.
Yes. And that's what I'm saying. Like,
but they need more people who know what they're doing for sure.
I think
they need
people
who are in tune with they need people who can balance it all out and be a modern version of what's needed.
I think we have no idea who's working there. And I think that I perceive that 90% of the people that work there know more than 90% of the people that are out here. Let's just say that. Like they are going to know way more than us in this matter. And they have these protocols that may seem dehumanized, but they're there for a reason.
See,
it would be much worse.
I feel there is some part of that that's true, but I also feel like there are people removed from the real world aspect of all this that need to be involved with it, boots on the ground sort of meshing of the Lawrence Fishburne and Kate Winslet characters. You need to have a hybrid of that in order to really get...
Well, Lawrence Fishburne was that. He was even saying, I remember,
yeah,
when I was on the boots on the,
yeah,
field.
Yeah, but he was never boots
happened
on the field, boots on the ground with something like this is what I'm saying.
Well,
so,
you never can. It's whoever's on the field. This is the first time that that's happened to them, right? In their
right
lifetime.
Yes.
So, but you get the, like I said, I like, yep, Lawrence Fishburne's character because he has a lot of weight to him. It seems like it weighed a lot on him. He tried his best to do what was right for his people and the people personally, even though sometimes they were unethical in his soul and mind. But that's the kind of leader you need, right? You need somebody to make the hard decisions, and it may be unethical, but logically that you have to do it this way.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm hoping that this movie does for a lot of people that would be angry and try to do the things that the people were doing in the movie, like, you know, beating people up and trying to get the vaccine.
Looting the stores.
Yeah.
That's all the predictability of human nature, though.
But see, that's what I mean, is that if we're all educated and we understand why this is happening, maybe more of us will choose the logical thing to do.
Well, you look at what's happening in China, you got to give them a little bit of credit, or at least to what we've seen. The people who have been locked in their houses for 2 to 3 weeks, there's not a lot of looting. There's not a lot of rioting, at least on the surface level.
It's martial law all the time over there,
yeah,
bro.
Yeah, that's true. So yeah, in closing, 5-star movie for me, one of my favorites of the decade, one of the most informative and educational films you can see these days. And
best epidemic movie too, I think.
Oh yeah, easy.
Like pure epidemic movie.
Yes, I mean,
we're not
sure.
going into zombies and all this stuff, but no. Let's just say that the movie that's going to scare you, like Requiem for a Dream on drugs, as this for as germs, this is what's going to do to you. So
good luck finding it streaming anywhere, because this taps into there's this large oligarchy who's responsible for saying, I don't want this streaming. I don't want this streaming now. I want people to pay money, because there's so much money in people watching this movie right now. It's not even funny. So, yeah, you do have to pay for it unless you own it already.
Don't drink the Forsythia, guys. Don't drink it.